Hello, and welcome to the return of Near Death Dolls. I'm Paige.
And I'm Lisa.
And we are your hosties with the mosties.
While talking about ghosties.
And other toot uncommon shit.
Ooh. Well, guess what, guys? This is the episode number 77 of Near Death Dolls. We're here to discuss murder and mayhem in ancient Egypt.
Lisa, you ready to walk like an Egyptian?
I'm ready to drink like one.
Hell yeah. Unfortunately, neither of us are actually ready to drink like an Egyptian because they drink beer like we drink water.
Wait, you drink water?
I know, right? Sometimes I try.
Well, that's good. That's good.
But I didn't have any beer today, and I didn't like beer. Back then, their beer was more like a stew. It had like bits of potato and whatever floating in it.
What?
So
really?
Yeah. It was more like a stew, but it was still fermented.
Fermented stew.
Yeah.
Beer. Stewer.
Yeah. Yummy.
Delicious. Well, okay. So you're not drinking that. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Buzzball.
Buzzball. Yay! What flavor?
Peach balls.
Peach balls with a little fuzzy little fuzzy
peach balls.
And how is it?
It's delicious, of course. Tastes just like a peach Bellini or whatever.
Oh man, I have not had a Buzzball in forever.
I know, girl. I went to the liquor store yesterday and I was like, oh my god, Buzzballs. I have to.
I don't think I've seen some since I've been here.
They might not have them in Wisconsin.
I don't think we've told anybody. Hey, guys, I moved from Texas to Wisconsin. No, that was a great segue. No, it's cool. Yeah. No, in January, I moved to Wisconsin. And it's cold here. It's a big, almost a year now. And I like it a lot. Everyone is super nice. Like, I thought people in Texas were nice. Like, Wisconsinites are, like, stupid nice. Not being nice to stupid, but, like, they're so nice.
They're so nice. Yeah,
they're
they
so
love
nice.
The cheese.
You betcha.
And the Packers.
Oh, it's a religion up here. People paint their houses green and yellow.
Oh, no. Oh,
and
no.
And put big G's above their garage.
And the cheese hats.
I have not seen a cheese hat here.
I'm disappointed.
But there's a lot of cheese and a lot of beer, and I'm loving it. It's great.
What are you drinking, Lisa?
I am drinking a Topo Chico Agua Fresca hard seltzer and ripe watermelon. These are really good. I started drinking these when I got here. I'm sure they have them in Texas. I'm sure they have them everywhere, but I only just found them here. So they're super good. They're like Trulies, but sweeter.
Ooh, I like that. That sounds good.
They have a little more sugar than a Truly. Like Trulies usually have 1 gram. This has 4 grams of sugar, but still not bad.
That's not bad.
And they have great flavors. And here's the thing about, like, when you get a variety box of hard seltzers, there's always, like, one flavor that's kind of yucky. Like, that's the one you leave for last.
Yes.
In the Agua Fresca pack, all of them are delicious. Like, I don't have a favorite because they're all that good.
That's amazing. That's a very high compliment.
It is a high compliment from Lisa, the seltzer bitch.
Yeah, that's your name. That's what people call you.
I have been called a seltzer bitch a time or two.
Not by me. I don't know who's calling you this.
Me.
Ah, okay. That's good.
It is I.
I'm a Buzzball bitch, I guess.
All right, Buzzball bitch.
I'm all right with that.
Well, hey, Paige, let's go ahead and jump into our story.
I'm ready. I've got my favorite game for us to play, even though we've only played it once before.
And it's our favorite?
It's my favorite. I don't know if it's your favorite. Today, we're going to play Anthropological Whodunit.
Okay.
Last time we played this game, we studied an ancient man frozen in a glacier for 5,000 years.
Otzi, right?
Yes, Otzi.
Otzi the Iceman?
That's what they called him anyway. Who knows what his name was 5,000 years ago?
Bob. I don't know where they got Otzi from. It's Bab.
It was the name of the Alps where he was found, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Otzi the Iceman defrosted in 1991 with an arrow in his back. Remember, we were just talking
right.
I guess something might have happened to him, but we had no idea, like, any suspects or anything like that.
That's true.
Well, at least today we've got some suspects.
Ooh. Okay, I know you are big into ancient Egypt, so I'm very excited to hear this.
I love ancient Egypt. I have two really big episodes for Near Death Dolls that are like epitome for me. Ancient Egypt.
And Jack the Ripper.
Jack the Ripper, you knew it.
Oh, I know you. I know you, girl. I've known you for a while.
Yeah, God. At least with it, this one, Murder of King Tut, I can slice it down to a small portion for ancient Egypt. But with Jack the Ripper, I'm going to have a hard time. Like, okay, how do I make this an episode that makes sense and isn't just like word soup?
I definitely understand because there's a lot of ways you can take it, especially with Jack the Ripper, and especially because there's probably a million different theories.
Yes, yes. So it's like, what do I pick? I probably would pick the royal theory that the prince did it, kind of. I don't want to give the story away. Just go watch From Hell, but...
Oh, yeah, okay.
Let's talk about someone who died a long time ago.
Okay, that's better.
So today we're going to explore the life and death of famed pharaoh Tutankhamun.
Is that how you say his name?
Tutankhamun.
Okay, if it's Tutankhamun and they call him King Tut, right? Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Why don't they call him King Tut?
That's better than all the... I was writing this episode on my phone and my phone kept auto-correcting Tut to Tit. King Tit.
King Tit. Okay.
I was like, I'm okay with that. I'm sure he was too. So we're going to figure out what dastardly villain put an untimely end to the reign of King Tutankhamun. Unlike in the case of Otzi the Iceman, we actually have three suspects and multiple victims. Dun, dun, dun. So first, I'd like to cite my main source for this. It's a book called Murder of Tutankhamun. What's that about?
Don't give it all away up front, huh?
Yeah, yeah. You want to know what the book is about? It's right there in the title. The author is Dr. Bob Breyer. He is my favorite nerd of all time. He's very, very entertaining. I have a lecture series on CD that he did about not all of the pharaohs, because there was a lot of pharaohs, but at least the ones that kind of, you know, we've heard of in these days. But the Bob Breyer himself, he got his nickname Mr. Mummy because he did a documentary for National Geographic where he got someone who was dying of a terminal disease to will his body to science, and Bob Breyer mummified him.
Is that how you want to go?
Not yes.
Good, but you want to be finished.
Yeah,
but
I'm going to die at one point. So yeah, mummify me, baby. And he tried his best, from what we know, to do it in the ancient style.
Is that like doggy style?
Eesh, with a dead body?
That's another episode.
That's Count von Kassel that we did before, who stole a dead body and brought it home.
I remember way too much.
It's hard to forget that guy. But I do recommend, if you guys get a chance, Bob Breyer has a very thick Brooklyn accent and he talks about ancient Egypt. So it's just the juxtaposition, and he's a very good storyteller. So I recommend.
I would listen just for his accent.
Hilarious to hear him talking about like King Tutankhamun and his fucking New York accent. But anyway, so this particular book is Bobby Boy's theory about who would have wanted King Tut dead and how King Tut's death saved the Egyptian way of life.
Okay, I am intrigued.
Dun, dun, dun. So let's dive in. Now, let's talk about how Tutankhamun became pharaoh. Tut, or Tit, was born to the pharaoh Akhenaten. Have you heard of Akhenaten?
Yes. I didn't know that was really? Egyptian, though. I don't know why I thought that was something else.
Really?
Well, the only reason I know is because I watch Ancient Aliens every night before bed, so I'm sure they've mentioned him a time or two.
Oh, I'm sure they have. Yes. Yes. Yes, we're going to talk a lot about Akhenaten today, because he's one of the big factors in why we think King Tut was murdered. So I'm very happy to hear that you've heard of him, because I hadn't heard of him till I took like a art history class. But anyway, so Tut and his daddy Akhenaten came from a long line of revered pharaohs of the 18th dynasty in Egypt. These ancestors of Tut invaded and conquered every surrounding country in order to get the top shelf goodies sent to them as taxes from these other countries. Because of this steady stream of valuables, such as gold from the south, wood from Lebanon, and etc., Egypt was rich as fuck.
Oh, yes. They got the pyramids and everything.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. They got gold coming out their ears.
Sounds painful.
Cheers to that.
Cheers.
So, now, for context, Egypt has already been around and had a whole roller coaster of ups and downs by the time Tutankhamun was born. Mm-hmm. The pyramids were already almost 2,000 years old by this time.
Oh, geez.
That's a long time.
That's a long time.
They had experienced good times and bad times as a nation, and still, the Egyptian way of life prevailed. Even after dips and getting invaded by other countries, they would always bring it back to the Egyptian standard of living. Mm-hmm. America, which is about 250 years old, is a toddler in diapers compared to ancient Egypt.
Yeah.
Yeah. The reason the ancient Egyptian culture was able to keep popping back up even after being invaded was because they had very strict, rigid rules and rituals for absolutely everything. And unless those rules were obeyed, then chaos would reign. And chaos was a big no-no. Chaos was like the devil and hell all rolled into one for ancient Egypt. They didn't want chaos. They wanted order and structure.
Okay, I can see that.
And that's why they lasted so long.
And that's why they make you, you know, walk like a pharaoh. Egyptian.
And they did that for a long time.
Walk like an Egyptian.
But pharaohs were Egypt.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sorry.
If you don't walk like an Egyptian, chaos is going to get you.
Okay.
Now, King Tutankhamun's grandpa, Amenhotep III, he knew this about Egypt, and he did an excellent job of upholding those values. And, you know, a lot of pharaohs had to really knew what they were about and knew how to keep the country going. Mm-hmm. But Akhenaten fucked it all up for a short time.
There's always one that does, right?
That's right. The black sheep of the family got the crown because somebody else died, and it was like, ah, fuck. He wanted to get creative anyway, and he changed up the Egyptian religion. Big no-no. You might have heard this part.
Oh, yes. I think I know where you're going with this, but go ahead.
Egyptians were not monotheistic. They were polytheistic. Yes, they were willing, as rigid as they were actually willing to accept the idea of any god out there in the world. They didn't care. They're like, yeah, bring them on in. Because what they liked were having multiple temples with multiple gods, and you could go and give your offering to multiple gods, kind of play the odds. Like, one of them's got to be listening.
I suppose.
Right on. So, the popularity of different gods waxed and waned throughout the 2,000 years that Egypt was around. But they were all there, and especially the big boys like Horus, Amun, Ra, Osiris, like the names that you've heard, those were still the big boys for the most part. But there were a lot of lesser gods. And with so many people giving offerings to so many different temples, religion was a huge part of the economy.
I guess I didn't think of it that way, but that makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like anybody who was getting money is like merchant class or anything, even the upper class, they would give a lot of money and land and cattle and all kinds of stuff to the church. Because of that, the priest class was populous and powerful. So there was a lot of them. And in addition, the gods, according to the priests, demanded that Egypt conquer all their neighbors in order to bring in all that sweet booty.
Okay.
And that would benefit the temple, because when the army returned, they would give a lot of their winnings to the temple, because thank you to the gods for the success in battle. And because of that, both religion and the army were just as powerful and important as the pharaoh in the country. And as long as there was a balance of power between all three of these pillars, the pharaoh, the religion, and the army, Egypt thrived. But Akhenaten, who was known before he was known as Akhenaten as Amenhotep IV, because his dad was Amenhotep III, when he got on the throne after his dad died, he declared that one of the lesser known gods named the Aten, or the sun disk, was suddenly the one and only god throughout all of Egypt.
Oh, he's shaking things up, isn't he?
He's shaking shit up, and it's not good for everybody else. And the Aten was such a random god. He could have thrown a pin at a map of all the different gods and just been like, yeah, that one, Aten, he's now the ruler. You know, it just didn't make a lot of sense why he would pick that one instead of like Amun, who's the daddy of the gods. He said, no, this lesser known one.
So let me ask you this real quick. Maybe you know, maybe you don't. So his name is Akhenaten, right?
Yes.
And the god is named
Aten.
Is there not some like similarity where he's like, oh, this one sounds like my name, so let's.
Oh, no. Okay. It's the opposite.
Oh.
He changed his name. So he was Amenhotep, which is Amun, I believe.
Oh, okay. He changed his name. My bad.
He added Aten at the end of his name. Mm-hmm. Akhenaten. Mm-hmm. Aten. Yes. So exactly. He knew what he wanted and he went for it full force.
Mm. Okay.
This was an insane revolution. The insane revolution meant that all the temples for other gods, which there wasn't even really that many temples for the Aten, so most of the temples got shut down, and he ordered that the name Amun particularly would be scratched out of all the temples and the wall, you know, monuments, everything, to be replaced by the Aten. And the new pharaoh went so far. Oh, we already talked about this. He changed his name from Amenhotep to Akhenaten. Mm-hmm. And then he took his family, the royal family, and the seat of power, the throne, basically, and he moved it to a city that hadn't been built yet. He said, I'm going to look. Okay, look, there's an empty place here. Let's go there. This is going to be my city. I'm never going to leave this city ever again. All my kids will be born here. And everyone who wants to worship the Aten can follow us.
Did something trigger him to want to become monotheistic?
There's some theories about that. We don't know specifically, but if you look at pictures of him, let me see. One of the pictures I sent you has artwork of Akhenaten. It's the second one, I believe, if you're looking.
All right, let's see. That's a terrible picture of him. I'm just kidding.
It is. Well, you know, it was on a wall.
It was etched into a wall, to be fair. This is etched a little pre-camera. Got it.
Yes. And, well, this we're going to get into it later, but he changed up a lot of the artwork and how the art was displayed. So it was like a completely new art style. But if you see here, he had himself displayed as looking different. Like he's got really weird his kids too, like really weird long head.
Yeah, I see that. Like
really alien-y. Skinny limbs, kind of like an alien, big belly. Like pharaohs would never let themselves be portrayed this way, and they think that he had himself portrayed that way because he had some sort of, you know, he was born maybe with some sort of deformity or disease that made him look different, which is why maybe, and he was treated differently. He wasn't supposed to be the pharaoh, but his older brother died, and so
he's the spare.
He was like,
he's not the
heir. Yeah, he's the spare. Yeah, and he was probably ignored most of his life and like put to the back. He wasn't in family portraits for a long time, so they think that he looked funny and he was probably treated funny. And because of that, when he came into power, he's like, I shall change, like, all of this.
All the things.
I hate all of you. So that's one of the theories, is why he would change everything. Mm-hmm. Now, the city that they are going to move to is named Amarna. And essentially, he created a cult to be the leader of. And all of his devoted followers moved with him to Amarna, down way south of everything else. And the problem was that the rest of the country that got left behind were not happy with these changes. And so they didn't even have the Pharaoh around. They could just like complain about him and talk about how much they liked the old ways better, and he wasn't even there to stop it, you know?
Wow. Yeah, they must have been getting cranky.
Yes. Yeah, you can imagine, like, for how many eons they've been doing the same things over and over, and suddenly he's like, we're gonna change it, and they're like, fuck that, I don't like this.
Like, I don't like this at all.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be kind of like if our president moved to Alaska. It's still in America, but it's real far away from where he was originally, and said like, no more freedom of speech or religion, it's all gonna be what I say it is now. And we'd all be like, what? Excuse me?
Do we not already say what half the time?
Yeah. Well, we do. We do. But at least it's not as bad as all that. We do all say what. That's because we question. Egyptians didn't question too much until this guy came around.
Question everything.
Question everything. Now, the Pharaoh traditionally is supposed to lead the army, even if he's not a fighter. He's supposed to be out there with the army. But he had made a promise. It's written in stone. He said, I am never going to leave the walls of Amarna. I'm always going to be here. I'm not going to lead out the military. And he didn't even let the military go without him. There was no more raids on other countries. They weren't getting any booty coming back to them. And so the army was effectively obsolete. And that's one of the pillars. And he had already destroyed one of the other pillars, which was religion.
Ooh, yeah, he's just fucking this shit up, isn't he?
He is. Now, Akhenaten spent his time, instead of fighting or, you know, doing what pharaohs are supposed to do, Akhenaten spent his time writing hymns and rituals for worshiping his god, the Aten, and commissioning art of himself and his family. That picture I sent you, that's his family. Those are his daughters and his wife, his great wife.
What's a great wife?
That's the main bitch.
Oh, the bottom bitch. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. The bottom bitch. So he has multiple. Pharaoh usually has multiple wives. I think Akhenaten only had two, but this was the main one.
So you can only worship one god, but you can still have two wives, two plus.
Isn't that funny?
It'd be
like a cult leader,
right?
Yeah. Like, I get to have sex with as many people as I want. Sip, what the shit.
Mm-hmm.
So he changed art as well, because like I said before, he had himself depicted as how he really looked. At least that's how we think he really looked. And if you Google Akhenaten or Amarna, you'll see a ton of pictures of statues of him, and he definitely looks a little weird. Like, he had one statue of him was where his hips were enormous, almost like he was a woman. So Don't know what he actually looked like, but they think that he probably didn't look like the pharaohs wanted to look like, I guess we could say. He didn't look strong. He didn't look like a big upstanding warrior man, which is what the pharaohs usually like to look
Ooh,
like.
Ooh, I do see a picture of him with like a big hips and a fupa.
Yeah, exactly. He's got his fupa.
He's got pharaoh fupa.
Yeah, all of... The Pharaoh Fupa, which is he's the only one who was depicted like that. Everybody else had six packs, even if it was a statue of them while they're in their 60s.
Uh-huh.
They still have like biceps and a six pack. And it's like, okay,
yeah,
well,
that's weird.
Not correct.
Any better, I probably would have thought that was a woman depicted.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Not knowing that it's supposed to be the pharaoh.
Yeah, has thighs
when the
like
pharaoh
me.
Was usually a man. Yeah, I know, right? It's like, oh,
some chunky
relatable
thighs. The guy saves lives, but damn, pharaoh,
you got enough money, you get a personal trainer.
Mm-hmm. Do some squats.
But anyway, so he also wanted to be shown, instead of being like a strong leader, he wanted to be shown having a good time with his family and worshiping the Aten with his family. So in one fell swoop, Akhenaten toppled all pillars of ancient society, and he gave no fucks about it. So, now, as you can imagine, this guy was only popular with the weirdos, like the people who were willing. I know, right?
I feel like we're talking about Manson over here. He's really popular with the weirdos.
Exactly. He's a fucking cult leader like Manson. Even like, and you know, forgive me all of my fellow LDS brethren, even though I don't go to church anymore, like Joseph Smith or Brigham Young, who took everybody to Utah so that they could worship in peace away from everybody else. Same thing. But this guy was a pharaoh. It's just, it's weird. It's a weird thing. So he was only popular with the people who were willing to like uproot their lives and go with him to this city that's not even built yet. It's like, I'm not going to have a home. I'm not going to have any food. But I'll come with you because I believe in your cause. Like a lot of people who have a good, solid foundation are going to be like, no, I'm going to stay in Thebes. Thank you, though. I've got food here. I'm okay.
So could he not command everybody to like uproot their lives and move? I mean,
I don't think he wanted everybody. He only wanted the people who were like gung-ho about the Aten.
Gotcha. All about the Aten.
And so the all about the Aten. So the fact that there wasn't any structures built yet or, you know, a supply of food or water. I mean, they probably had water from the Nile, but as a result of him taking all these people with him, he had 30,000 people to feed and to house all on the pharaoh's dime out of the, they left behind 5 million. So it's like 5 million people, 30,000 of those 5 million people went to Amarna.
Okay, so a select few.
A select few, yes. So not. It sounds like a lot.
Compared to the 5 million?
It's no longer that many. So he had to provide in order for them to stick around with him, just like Charles Manson had to provide dune buggies to his cult people.
Okay.
We'll do a Manson episode. That's oh, like third sure. in my, I need to do these topics. But right. He wasn't only destroying the economy so that they didn't have any income. He was also draining the already, they were rich, so they had a lot of money, but he was draining all of it very quickly mm-hmm. to bring people to this new city and build it up. So it's a no wonder that after about, I think he served for about 20 years as pharaoh before he died. And it's no wonder that the country was ready to immediately go back to their old ways. Yeah. Like, fuck that guy. He sucked.
I wonder if that's how, like, during the Tudor reign with Henry VIII, going from Catholicism to Church of England, back to Catholicism, back to Church of England. You know?
Yes. Yes. I can imagine it would be very similar, isn't it? Because it's mm-hmm. like, we had this one way of life and now suddenly you're telling us we have to completely change. I would hate that. So after he died, anyone who had been with him at Amarna, those 30,000 people, including his royal council, all of them completely abandoned the Aten. They abandoned Amarna. They all moved back to Thebes, to like, you know, other cities within Egypt, and they all pretended it didn't happen.
They just come strolling back into town like,
yeah,
hey,
we were just on a walk. We're back.
been a bit, guys? Huh? Yeah.
Yeah. I love that Amun. It's a not
great,
Aten.
That's a great Amun necklace you got yeah. there. Amulet, yeah. whatnot.
You see that I have Horus all over myself. It's not the Aten. I wouldn't do that. No, it's not me. Nah, I am back to normal now. But before we move on, I do have a little anecdote that is fascinating to me.
Okay.
And I hope you're interested too. So you can bring up the picture again if you like. It's the same one we looked at before.
The second picture, correct?
The second picture. That's his great wife. And his great wife is named Nefertiti.
Oh, that sounds very familiar. Is this the same one that everyone's heard of?
Yes. That's what's so fascinating to me. She lived almost all of her life in Amarna mm-hmm. with this king, and people have heard of her more than they've heard of her husband, even though he changed all of Egyptian culture.
You know, it's funny, like the picture of her, when I saw it, I thought Nefertiti.
Because of the hat, maybe?
But yeah, the hat.
I mm-hmm. think so, too. Yeah. Very iconic. Very mm-hmm. iconic. And that's, if you move through a little bit, let me see, that's number four. That's her bust.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. Uh-huh.
If you guys at home listening in, if you want to look it up, you just type in Nefertiti bust or just Nefertiti. It's going to show up. Mm-hmm. This is the famous bust that made Nefertiti a household name.
Yeah, she's pretty.
She's pretty. Now, this isn't Tutankhamun's mother. Tutankhamun was born to the second wife, Kiev, and the main wife, Nefertiti. What's so interesting is that this bust was found in an archaeological dig at Amarna, abandoned. It was unfinished. The person who had been at Amarna making all of these royal statues and inscriptions and things like that, once Akhenaten died, he, like everybody else, fucked off and pretended that never happened. So he left this beautiful unfinished bust of Nefertiti. It was found very luckily. We could have never had this of her and never known who she was. And it's all because, you know, it could have gotten destroyed. It could have been, you know, stolen by grave robbers, you know, going in there to see what people had left behind. It wasn't. We have it because this man just left all his shit in his studio.
I can foresee sometime, like, long after I'm gone, like, archaeological diggers come in. They're like, wow, look at all these unfinished projects this bitch has. Or maybe it was just my husband.
Maybe.
Like all these unfinished, let's see, she cross stitches, crochets, paints, sculpts.
Yeah. Books, lots of books.
Books, all these unfinished books. You know, freaking bookmarks halfway through all of these.
I know, I have the same thing. I'm like, where are all my bookmarks? Oh yeah, they're in the books I never finished.
Yep.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I just think that's interesting. So she actually died before Akhenaten, and then, like I said, I mean, it's just such a surprise to me that her name survived, even though we don't, as a culture, you know, like I'd heard of Nefertiti long before I knew who Akhenaten was. I just think that's interesting.
Like I said, I've heard his name, but I've heard hers way more.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if you think of Egypt and you think of Egyptian standard of beauty, maybe, or just like a classical look, you might just picture this bust without even realizing it.
It's just for sure.
So iconic. We're going to be talking about her daughter in a minute here. There were three men who were instrumental in restoring Egypt to pre-Aten status. And these men were not fucking around. They were the royal advisors to Akhenaten. And later, once Akhenaten died and Tutankhamun took over, they were also his royal advisors. Mm-hmm. They quickly scooped up the young boy, Tutankhamun, who was about 8 or 9 at the time when his dad died, and his half-sister, Nefertiti's daughter, Ankhesepaten.
Yeah, I have not heard of that one. That's a new one.
You might have heard of her name once she changes it.
Oh, okay.
Because they take away the Aten, and now it's Ankhesenamun.
Oh, yes. Okay, that one I've heard.
Yeah, they stole that name. We'll talk about it anyway.
Oh, I'm sure we will.
We will talk about it. So they took Ankhesepaten and Tutankhaten at the time.
His name was Tutankhaten?
Before, yeah. Yeah, before he... I'm sorry. It was Tutankhaten?
Tutankhaten?
Yeah, kind of.
Sounds like a brand of toilet paper.
Or cotton balls. I was thinking cotton balls. But the two of them were taken to Thebes, away from Amarna, the only city they'd ever known. Now, before the new pharaoh could even reach the destination, the royal vizier, one of our suspects, his name was Aye. Aye. That kind of Aye.
Captain.
He had already decided, along with the other two suspects, the scribe and the accountant, that the religion of the Aten would be wiped clean from historical records, and that included any mention of the heretical pharaoh Akhenaten. His name was chiseled out of most things.
Isn't that funny? Like, think of how many things they'd have to go walk around and be like, oh, there's his name, tick, 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 tick.
Yeah.
You know, that's me hammering, chiseling away from tick, history. Tick, 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 tick.
Right, I know. And that's why we still do have a little bit of mention of him, because they didn't find all of the mentions.
Redacted.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a Sharpie, but
yep. Mm-hmm.
It's a chisel.
I like it.
Now, since these three royal advisors were so eager to prove that the new pharaoh, this boy, didn't have any connection to what his dad had done, they changed his name and his bride's name, his half-sister.
That happens.
It happens, especially in royalty.
Yeah.
Both of them had Aten in the name, just as his father had changed his name from Tutankhamen to Tutankhaten. Now that their father was dead, Tutankhaten became Tutankhamen, switching Aten for a moon. And his wife and sister, Ankhesepaten, became Ankhsunamun. And where we might know this name from, besides it being Tutankhamen's wife, in the 1930s and 1999 movie called The Mummy, they used the name Ankhsunamun for their ladies in the movie.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tongue twister, but it sounds real cool in Egyptian, so I know why they used it. Makes sense.
So she was his Tutankhamen law wife.
Good one. It's a good one.
even Boo sat up for that one.
Like, oh, mommy's funny.
She's like, Ma, that was pretty lame. If you weren't Ma, you'd be Dad, making Dad jokes.
Mom jokes are better than Dad jokes.
They're, I mean, a little, but not much.
You are talking about an ancient culture, so it's clever. It's like smart. You're being smart.
I think so. Thank you.
I think so. They've got their names changed. I don't quite know how old she was at the time, but very similar in age to Tutankhamen, maybe even a couple years older than him. Right. But they were taken away from their home. They were taken away from their family. Most of their family was dead by this point. They were dragged to a new city where, even though they were Pharaoh and Pharaoh's great wife, they were just figureheads. They were so young that they weren't going to be in charge of anything and making any decisions. It was all up to, especially I, the royal vizier.
The royal eye.
But yes, the royal vizier I was making a lot of the decisions for Tutankhamen and his wife. And basically, they were just figureheads. There's a lot of imagery, like we can find in this images I showed you. Number 3, that's Tutankhamen and his wife Ankhsunamun.
Not very good likeness of them.
You can kind of see where this is transitioning from being the art style of his father, because he's got a little bit of a belly.
Yes.
But it's also and it's also leaning back into the more traditional art style. It's like a mix of the two.
I can see that, definitely.
So this was like part of the transition to get back to normal.
Gotcha.
So there's a lot of images of the two of them together, hunting, fishing, going to temples, hanging out, feeding each other.
Partying, raves.
You know what royals get up to. So that's what they did for about 10 years. Tutankhamen and Ankhsunamun, they didn't do much.
Okay. Just hung out, had a good time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they wanted to do more or if they were just like, whatever you guys want us to do, we're kids.
Probably that.
I would think so. So let's talk about our three suspects now that we're getting into it. Firstly, we have General Hormheb.
Pardon?
His name is Hormheb, Hormheb.
Oh. Hormheb.
Now, so that's our first suspect. He's one of the three royal advisors. He's the leader of the army, and he's the royal scribe. But even though, so he worked for Akhenaten, and since Akhenaten had no interest in military dealings and wouldn't let Hormheb do anything, he's useless. He's just sitting around, probably bored out of his mind. I don't know. Sure. And that might be why he also became the scribe, because he's like, well, I got to do something.
I'll take on multiple roles just to have something to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was more proud of his scribe title than he was of his army title, probably because he never got to go and fight. Now, the second one we have is Maya, M-A-Y-A. Mm. He was the royal accountant.
Oh, they always shady.
They shady. And he was pissed, I'm sure, because Akhenaten was draining the coffers and not bringing in more money. So the accountant's like, I can't cook these numbers any more than I already have.
I can only sunbake these for so long.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We can't mummify these numbers. Okay. There. It's always going to come up as zero. All right. So he's probably upset about this whole Akhenaten thing because of that. And lastly, we have our most likely suspect, I, the royal vizier.
I, you, me?
I. Okay. I had served both Akhenaten and his father, Amenhotep III. So I had been a royal advisor for a long time. He's an old man by this point. And from what we've seen of his tomb, of Tutankhamun's tomb, anything that shows what, you know, I was doing.
Every time you say it, it just sounds funny.
I? What I was doing?
I can say what I was doing.
It is a very confusing name. I remember listening to the Bob Breyer lecture series, and every time he'd say I was like, what? Oh, I. Yeah. Not I. I. I would be better. I. So we think of him as the main suspect. He served both. He's served the royal family for a long time, and he was very ambitious and had a very high opinion of himself. And I can show you a picture of why we believe that he was very ambitious. It's the first one in the list that I sent you.
Okay, let's go back to that. Oh, so I see. What is he holding?
He is holding some kind of wand, very Egyptian magic kind of thing, but
it's a floppy wand.
It's a floppy wand. It's a very crooked wand. Needs to go to the doctor, I think, but
and needs a tummy tuck. Goodness.
I know, right? Well, this is still in the kind of like Amarna Akhenaten era where it's like, oh, let's show the bellies. I don't know why.
I have to say, I love his leopard cheetah wrap that he has around himself, because it actually still has like the head, the tail, the claws. That's so
it's
awesome.
It's like he's just holding it on himself. Yeah.
He's
yeah.
like, it died and he just wrapped it around himself. He's like, well, this will do.
This was my pet and now it's my rug.
My kitty.
My little shrug. So in this picture, what you'll see is that's Tutankhamun, and this is on Tutankhamun's tomb wall, so he's already dead by this point.
Oh, nice.
And you can tell because his feet are lined up together, that in Egyptian art means that the person is dead at the time of the inscription or statue
the fairy
or
wings
whatever.
Or the angel wings on him.
Oh, those are his, what do they call them? Scepters, like his royal scepters that he's holding. And they stick out real far.
No, I was about to say, they look like angel wings, like...
I do. They do.
I am dead. And
I was like, what are you talking about? Oh, I see what you mean. So he's dead. And this is a common inscription on tomb walls of the pharaoh and the person who's going to be taking over for the pharaoh opening. It's called the opening of the mouth ceremony. It's like, you're dead. We're interring you in the ground and we're going to open your mouth so that you can live on afterwards. Royal Vizier I put himself right there. He was like, I know who's taking over after Tutankhamun. It's me.
It's me.
And you can tell it's I because that lovely leopard jacket that you mentioned is the basically royal vizier, prime minister, like that's what they wear. They have to hold it. It's real heavy. And it shows them like kind of hunched over. The weight of the country is on their shoulders, symbolically.
Yeah.
So that's just one example. But there are other examples in Ai's tomb of him next to Tutankhamun where he's huge. And if you see someone that's on an Egyptian wall, if someone is bigger than someone else, it means they're more important. So he was like, I'm more important than the pharaoh. I.
You. I mean, he.
I.
Oh, yeah.
So that's how we can tell he was very ambitious and thought highly of himself. And, you know, he showed himself in another thing with a divine sun ray. Which means he's a god. It's like, okay, you are a commoner technically, mister.
Calm down.
Calm your tits, okay?
Calm your tuts.
Calm your tuts. Yeah, calm your tuts. So this high-handed approach to being an advisor might be fairly innocent and just like, oh, I like to make myself look more important than I am. Except for the fact that the very next pharaoh after Tutankhamun died was I. He's like, I know just the man for the job. It's me. So that's a little suspicious, a little sus, as the kids might have said a couple years ago. But let's not rule out the other two suspects just yet. They might have all been in on it together.
You never know.
And it could be that Hormheb and I were in it together, because after I passed away as an old man, he only served as pharaoh for a couple years. Hormheb took over after that. So it's kind of like, interesting. But with that cliffhanger of, oh, we don't know who did it, we'll stop there and pick up again next episode.
No! Just keep going!
I know, right? I literally cannot, because that's all I have written for today.
Okay. Fair enough.
But that's it. That's what we got. So we're going to talk about Tutankhamun's reign, when he lived from 10 to 19 years old or so. We're going to talk about his potential cause of death and what happened to his widow, Ankhsenamun, after he died.
Did he have he had multiple wives as well? Or he just had her?
As far as we know, he only had Ankhsenamun, as far as I know anyway.
Okay.
And he was still pretty young. Maybe as he got older, he would have gotten a harem? Harem?
A harem?
Harem?
Yeah.
Lots of ladies.
Bitches. Den of bitches. Pharaohs had that too. Okay.
I know, right? Den of bitches. He might have gotten a den of bitches. But yeah. Yeah, there's very... So one thing I want to bring up before we talk about it next week or whatever the next episode is.
Next episode, sure.
Next episode. Yeah. The reason that the great wife is so important, like Nefertiti or Ankhsenamun, is that women carried the royal bloodline. And the only way a man could become pharaoh was to marry a princess like Ankhsenamun. So that's why they ended up marrying their half siblings or full siblings, because it was like, oh, I want to be king. The only way to do that is to marry the great wife, which would have been Tutankhamun's sister at this point. And after he died, whoever married her would be the next pharaoh. She's still the one, the decider, essentially.
Yeah, didn't Cleopatra marry her brother?
Yes, and her father.
Oh, I didn't know she married her father. I know she married her brother, and then he ended up dying. Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Yes. She had listed out several husbands. It was weird.
Yeah.
It was like her dad, who was already dead at that time. Her brother. It was like, what? Okay, Cleo. Yeah. You got ideas. I get it.
Do what you do, girl, I guess.
Do what you do if you want to be in charge so bad. But she was Greek.
Yeah, she was of she was Greek and something else technically.
Yeah. Not Egyptian anyway. But I mean, you know, the Greeks had conquered Egypt by that point. So she was in charge, but she wasn't Egyptian.
Right. I just saw it the other day that she was technically something else, but yeah, Greek essentially.
Yeah, yeah. The Ptolemies, the PT. Mm-hmm. I can't spell it. Ptolemy.
Yeah, Ptolemies. Yeah.
Ptolemies. Yeah, yeah. But anyway, so that's what we've got for today. I just wanted to get into the background because it's so important to know why Tutankhamun's dad was so unpopular and why Tutankhamun might have been murdered.
Ooh. Okay, well, I'm ready. Let's just end this episode. We'll record the next one. Make it up as you go. You already know the story.
I do kind of know the story. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. That's our episode. If you like what you've heard, maybe you'd like to join our Patreon. We have 3 great tiers to choose from and plenty of perky perks.
Mm-hmm. But don't forget about our show, Dolls After Dark, where we both come with topics to discuss. And then we get dark, but mostly silly. You know us, me and Paige.
Yep.
It's pretty much all silly all the time. So if you like our regular episode, just come on and join our Dolly community on Patreon. The links are in our show notes.
That's right. And speaking of checking things out, check out our socials. Come follow us on Instagram @NearDeathDollsPodcast. We'll be announcing new episodes on there mm-hmm. as they come out. We have a TikTok account where we need to add a few more things, but we've got some good stuff already. Just search yep. Near Death Dolls Podcast. And we're on Tumblr at neardeathdolls.tumblr.com. And if you want to help a doll out, subscribe and please leave us a review.
That's right. And as always, our darling dolls, keep your friends close.
And your royal advisors closer.
Ooh. Dun dun dun, part two. Hurry up.
All right, everybody. Take care.
All right, we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye. A special thanks to Sam Hears for our art and music.
If you'd like to see more from him, check out the links in our show notes.